All right, thank you. Appreciate everybody taking the time to come to this session about freeing your Kubernetes network. My name is Doug Smith, and I am joined with truly the mastermind behind this work, Miguel. And I'm lucky enough to get to work with him. What we're going to talk about today is a feature that we often refer to as user-defined networking, or UDN, which is kind of a way of changing the paradigm about how Kubernetes networking works at its core, and especially related to virtual machine use cases. So what I'm going to do is kind of introduce some of the motivations, some of the problems, and then Miguel's going to get into the nitty-gritty about the details of how to use it, and if we've got time, run through a demo as well. There is a large stack of open source technologies that are involved in this particular project. We're already building on top of Kubernetes, and we're using virtualization on top of Kubernetes as well. And really, these two projects right here at the front, Oven Kubernetes, which sometimes we call OvenK, and KubeVirt are really at the top of this. But all of these technologies are open source. You can pull the hood open and get into all of them. Whoops. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the motivation here. And I kind of see it as sort of two sides to the same coin. First, you've got really your traditional virtualization user. And in a traditional virtualization world, like say if you're using OpenStack and you're using Neutron, you're going to make an assumption that you're going to get a layer 2 isolation across your virtual machines in order to segregate the traffic properly and to create a tenancy scenario. And if you're a Kubernetes savvy user, you're gonna probably have an assumption that you're gonna have a bit more of a like managed experience, a bit more of an opinionated way to do something. So if you are putting together something like this today, you're probably, prior to user-defined networking, for example, you're gonna have to kind of like baby step all of the things that may be involved. So maybe you're going to have to figure out your own IP address management solution, and you're going to need DHCP in order to handle that. So you'll have to set up these things yourself. And this is kind of underpinned by something that is truly different between the virtual machine world and the like purely containerized pod world, which is in a virtual machine scenario, you're often going to assume that the life cycle is different. If you have a virtual machine that goes down, it's not really going to go down. It's going to be migrated. And what are you going to need in that scenario? Probably persistent IP addressing. So once you get that migration, your traffic's still going to go to just the right thing. It's not like a pod lifecycle where you kind of build your applications assuming that they can arbitrarily die and they'll come back up, they'll have arbitrary IP addressing. So that's quite a bit different. So really the motivation is to try to merge these worlds and make something that fits this a little bit better, because the bottom line is very opinionated. It's designed for web scale, and it's going to have one single network where everything is assumed to have connectivity between all of the elements in that cluster. So if you wanted to make something that had this type of functionality, you'd probably have to create that kind of micro-segmentation, we'd say, using a network policy. And the thing with that is that it's expensive on two fronts. First of which is it's going to be computationally expensive, because you're going to have to make a lot of different rules in order to get that kind of segmentation. And then it's also going to be procedurally expensive for the humans that are involved, because they're going to have to create it. And some of the things may be like really challenging to do that way. So these are the kind of things that we're, like I said, trying to like weave these two worlds. So let's look a little bit at the use cases for this. So one thing that user-defined networking helps to provide is a native namespace isolation. So instead of having that single Kubernetes network where everything is connected, what you'll be able to do right out of the box with user-defined networking is to create network isolation per namespace. So you could have just the pods in the orange namespace can only speak to the pods in the orange namespace. Same with the red, green, and blue, there's isolation between those. In Kubernetes, typically, you would have connectivity between all of those namespaces. There's also a construct for a cluster-wide network isolation, CUDN, cluster user-defined networking, which allows you to logically group together those namespaces and get that isolation per group as well. And looking at the goals, we want to have that workload and tenant isolation, just like I was diagramming there before. We want to have it so that you can manage that isolation between those namespaces or groups of namespaces. Another thing that we really wanted to do is make sure that you are able to handle overlapping pod IP addresses. So let's say you go and set up a situation that has a typical like /24 subnet, and it's 192.0.2.0/24, and then you're going to make yet another group of these pods with isolation. Instead of having to go and tweak it and change that to have a bunch of namespaces so that they're contiguous subnets, you can just kind of copy and paste and just use that again and again and again and again, which will make it much easier. Additionally, we want to have that isolation, but we also want to have the kind of Kubernetes APIs that you would expect to have, such as services, network policies, admin network policies. We still want to be able to use that kind of stuff as well. So that is still available and accounted for. We want to have that stable IPAM configuration, like I was saying. We want to have those persistent IPs when we get that, when we have those migration scenarios. We want to have that persistent IP when that VM is migrated and comes up on another machine. We want to make sure that that works. Another thing that we want to make sure that works for you well is to have your public cloud support so that you can make sure that your traffic is going to get to the place where it needs to go on a public cloud. So in a public cloud scenario, your provider likely is going to have some constraints around how network traffic moves across their network, which may mean that you're going to need to let that public cloud provider know about the IP addresses that you're going to use, and you don't want to have to make a phone call. Actually, no one has done that for the last 20 years. Submit a ticket. Maybe no one has done that in a while. Or provision it via their web interface to like keep adding IP addresses, kind of a thing. We want to make sure that that is handled by these technologies themselves. And lastly, but not leastly, is so while we still have that network isolation, if you are doing functionality in your virtual machines that accesses the Kubernetes API, acts as a controller, for example, or you need something out of KubeDNS, we don't want to deny you from using those services either. So we make sure that there is connectivity to those kind of like core Kubernetes services. So let's dig into the API, and I'm going to let Miguel take the stage here.
Good. How did you do this? Okay.
You got it.
No, it's okay, Peter. It's okay. Managed to. Okay, so the first thing we're going to be seeing here is how the API looks like. How do you actually use and configure the feature? So let's start with an example because it makes it easier to understand. So if you want to configure namespace isolation for a namespace, let's say it's green, you would provision this the CRD called user-defined network. Again, you have to decide to name the namespace in which you're going to be isolating your network. Because again, the idea is for you to kind of override the default cluster network. You want something that is not the default cluster network. And you want to do that per namespace. You do not need to do that for the entire cluster. Now, how does the configuration look like? Well, it's quite simple. You have to decide the topology. For virtualization, you need to specify layer 2. That's the only topology that will work for virtualization. There are more topologies, but for vert, you have to stick to layer 2, and then you configure your layer 2. So you have to specify that the role is primary. So this is a primary user-defined network, so it knows how to override the default cluster network. You specify the subnets. It can be like dual stack, so you can put here like single stack IPv4, single stack IPv6, or dual stack. You cannot do more than that. And you have to specify that the IPAM lifecycle is persistent, so that the IP address allocation knows to stick to the virtual machine lifecycle instead of the pod lifecycle. For the other use case in which we want to interconnect two different namespaces, so in this scenario you have the red namespace and the blue namespace, and they are interconnected by the HAPI network, what we would do is to use this other CRD called cluster user defined network, as Doug said, explained before. Notice in the metadata that this is no longer namespaced, so it's a cluster-wide resource. And if you focus in the bottom, in the network stanza, you'll see that it's exactly what we've seen before. You specify the topology, and then you give configuration of what the topology looks like. So role primary, IPAM lifecycle persistent, so that the IP addresses will be persistent, and you define a subnet. The big difference comes from expressing how or which namespaces you want to interconnect. For that, you use the namespace selector, so pretty standard Kubernetes part of the model. You define what namespaces you want to do. You just put here, like for instance, values, red namespace and blue namespace, and you'd be interconnecting those two. And everything else would not be able to communicate with them. Okay, so we've seen how the API looks like and how you configure the feature and enable it on your namespaces, the ones you're interested on. Now, how does this look like from the Ovn perspective, and how does this actually work? So for every UDN that you create, Ovn Kubernetes will create an Ovn layer 2 switch. So that's why these things are isolated. So your red namespace is using one layer 2 switch that is totally disconnected from the rest of the network. Your yellow namespace is using an entirely different layer 2 switch. And this, all these entities that you see here are replicated per each UDN. The workloads that are in the bottom, so you see like pod 1, pod 2, which happens to be a VM, and pod 3 are just connected to this layer 2 switch. And then we have a gateway router in each of the nodes for it to be able to egress to the internet to implement more features than that. This gateway router is also connected to an external switch in each individual node. And this external switch has a particular, a special type of port that connects it to an OVS bridge. And then we have a physical interface on the node for the traffic to like leave the cluster. Okay, so question now becomes like, how do we manage IPAM for the VMs? Because we need to do that in a different way than we do the pods. So Ovn Kubernetes, what it does is every time it sees a pod being created, it will introspect the pod and figure out, okay, this pod is a pod, I'll do nothing. If it figures out that, or if it understands that a pod is for virtual machine, it will provision a DHCP, an object in Ovn called DHCP option, and it will put the following information. So IP address, gateway, DNS, hostname, and MTU. This only happens for the VMs. it's quite easy to understand that the gateway, the DNS configuration, and the MTU are common for all the objects in the network, but the IP address and host name are per VM. Okay, we need to move along a little bit faster. So how do we enable this for cloud platforms? Well, the solution is quite obvious. You have to SNAT from the pod IP address to the node IP address. Otherwise, your cloud provider will just look at your traffic and totally stomp on that. And if you remember something Doug told before in the objectives, we want to have overlapping subnets. It's kind of the plot thickens a little bit, because in order to implement that scenario, you need to add an additional layer of NATing. So let's consider this scenario. You have two different UDNs, primary UDNs actually. So we have the blue in the left and the red in the right. For each of these primary UDNs, we have to compute. Ovn Kubernetes decides something which we call like a masquerade IP. So if you look, like the blue network has the .12 IP address in the last octet, and the red has a .13. So there's like a specific per network masquerade IP. And on the gateway router, we do an SNAT from the pod IP to this per network masquerade IP. And when the traffic hits the OVS bridge on the node, we do another layer of NATing, and we NAT from this per network masquerade IP to the node IP. The traffic leaves outside the cluster. Once it goes back, we do the other thing around. We do it the other way around. We un-SNAT back to the per network masquerade IP, and on the gateway router, we un-SNAT it to the actual workload IP address. So yeah, it comes with a cost, but it's a very cool feature. So how do we actually do stable IPAM? It's actually quite simple. The idea is mainly like if your virtual machine migrates to a different node, we just want the IP address to be the same. And there's another thing we want. We want the gateway configuration to be consistent. So IP address and gateway configuration have to be consistent. Because if they're not, your existing TCP connections on east-west traffic are broken, and we don't want that. And on the north-south kind of traffic, if your gateway configuration is not consistent, they also break, and we also don't want that. Like, probably your workloads will not tolerate it. So the trick is quite simple.